parent says, I'm the parent and you're the child. I'm the boss, you're the employee. And anytime you create a hierarchy like that, you start disconnecting from the fact that on a deep level, we actually want all of us to enjoy a wonderful life. And on a deep level, we know that we're all equal.
As an employer, your business depends on your staff. They are the backbone of your company. But because you face unique challenges managing your team, you need to have the right resources. On this podcast, industry expert Alex Atwood tackles it all so you don't have to.
I am super excited to be talking to my good friend, Dave Griot. Dave has the unique superpower to create movements in public consciousness. And he's done it twice. First, with the company called Karma Tribe, which was a gifting network, which started with a conversation with him and his friends about how we could build karma points through gifting, sort of paying it forward. And second, he did it with a viral campaign that went global called Thank You Plant Medicine, which helped to take the stigma out of plant medicine and psychedelics. This was a viral movement that came out of the International Ayahuasca Conference in 2019. Today, Dave uses technology called NVC, nonviolent communication, and it's basically a way to transform relationships and create harmony from any type of potential conflict. I'm so excited to hear how this new way of conflict resolution can apply to organizations and businesses of all kinds. And we are here with David Griot. Hello, my friend.
Hey, Alex. Great to be here with you today.
I am absolutely ecstatic about being here with you, Dave. So we first connected in an ayahuasca journey, and what I first noticed about you was your kind and compassionate demeanor. And I learned that you have great ambitions in terms of changing human consciousness in a big way, in a worldwide way. But what I didn't learn too much about was Karma Tribe, which you created as an organization that came out of a conversation between you and some friends. So tell me about how you got the idea for Karma Tribe and tell me a little bit about what that journey looked like.
Sure, Alex. Well, for many years, I was a couch surfer. Have you heard of couch surfing?
Yeah, of course. It's more formalized now, but I used to do it back in the 90s, just basically like crash on my friends' couches.
Yeah, so there is a website, Couchsurfing, where you can offer space in your house if you're willing to invite travelers in for a night or two, and you can also find places to stay. And I used it in my travels around the US, around Argentina and Uruguay, and staying with different people, and then receiving people at my house in Austin. And I was always amazed at how enriching it was to offer a space at your place, and then the friendships that come out of it and everything that that leads to. So with a friend, we had the idea, could this concept be extended to any kind of service? Because we all have different resources available. Both we have extra furniture, extra possessions, and we also have talents that we often don't know how to share them or where to channel them. And we all have different needs. And so we thought, well, in the regular money system, there's always needs to be money in the middle. What happens if person A has what person B needs, and person B has what person C needs, and person C has what person D needs? So we thought, let's create a social network based on generosity, where people share their services for free with each other, and you build up a certain prestige in the network, similar to couch surfing. So I built a website called Karma Tribe. So on it, you could offer any type of thing, and you would get comments on your profile, and you would make your way up the karmic ladder from new tribe member all the way up to tribe healer, tribe leader, guru, altruist, sage, and all the way up to enlightenment, 10,000 good vibes points.
Awesome.
And so, for example, I would offer French class or English classes, and then someone would apply for it, and then I would read on their profile, oh, Juan helped me build a fence in my yard. He's such a great guy. Juan has been walking my dogs for 3 weeks. I love this guy. Thank you, Juan. And then so based on the feedback that you read on people's profile, then you can decide to help them. And I invested my entire life into this project for about 5 years. It grew to be in 63 countries. We had a thriving social media presence. And unfortunately, it shut down due to lack of a sustainable business model, but it was an amazing experience.
Mm. What was your expectation for Karma Tribe prior to starting it? Like, where did you see it going?
Well, I'm a visionary dreamer type, and I thought, this is for sure going to reach millions of people. It's going to create a whole new alternative economy because we all have things to share, and what's easy for you is difficult for me, etc. I saw it exploding like Google or Facebook, where just because of the fact that millions of people are using it, then the business model, you find it later kind of thing.
Right. So it would work itself out and eventually maybe be funded through maybe ad revenue, right? Because there's so many people there. Right. So at what point did you realize that it wasn't sustainable?
Well, I kept persevering and persevering, even though the facts were kind of in front of my eyes of the fact that my bank account was depleting and no money was coming in, basically. And at the beginning, you mentioned ayahuasca. Well, through the use of ayahuasca, I've been able to realize that I had some things going on in myself during that, the journey of building that project, which were blocking me from being open to receiving money and even charging a fee, receiving funding and stuff. So I guess a fear of money, financial blocks within myself, things like that.
Yeah. It sounds like maybe a fear of making some bold requests around that when they were needed. You're not alone in terms of entrepreneurs, leaders, creators that are in these type of circumstances, and they continue to spend money, spend resources when the obvious things that are clear are not so clear, because sometimes they get overwhelmed in whatever sort of emotion or lofty goals that they have. So that's something that I can relate to, and I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs can relate to. So you started Karma Tribe, and you were able to get a good amount of traction around that, being in a worldwide movement. So then suddenly, you're in a position where you realize you can't afford it, and this circumstance of a hacker comes in. So then what do you do there? Do you lick your wounds? Do you start to think about what the next journey is for you? Tell me a little bit about once that happened. I can tell you there's plenty of entrepreneurs out there who've had similar experiences, and I really want to hear about what you did in between.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went through a bit of a depressive phase, which is unusual for me, being an energetic, upbeat guy. But I really felt like I had messed up my opportunity to really contribute to the world. And I thought that I had convinced myself that this was going to be my great gift to the world, and this was going to reach millions of people. And so when it shut down, I felt like my arm had been amputated, and I was getting like the phantom tingling of just thinking about, oh yeah, Karma Tribe. Oh no, Karma Tribe is no more. And being very sad. And then in that context, again, I can't help but mention it, because what really happened was that in that context, I was invited to an ayahuasca ceremony, which I had never had any interest beforehand, but I decided to go because I trusted my friend, and I was kind of feeling very low at that time. And during the event, I experienced finding so much light inside of myself and feeling like that I was just getting started with what I could do to contribute to the world, and that I should hold my head up and not be afraid to step up as a leader in my country and basically embrace new opportunities, because it was just the very tip of the iceberg of what I'm capable of to contribute to humanity.
What I want to talk about is first of all, I want to learn a lot about NVC, nonviolent communication, and I want to hear how that has now become your prime focus. And I clearly see how that technology relates to everything else that you've been doing.
There's one of the best business books that I ever read is called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by, I think, John Maxwell. It's a great book for the leaders that are listening. And one of the things that you learn in this book is that the law of the lid, which is that the leadership abilities of the leader of the organization is what kind of caps the ability of the organization to expand. And so I could go on about this. It's very interesting. But
I'm liking it already. What you just said, super relatable. So whatever limitations the leader of the organization has on him or herself also by default becomes the limitation of the organization that they lead. It makes total sense.
Exactly. There's a dramatic example of this that's worth mentioning is the McDonald's brothers, who derived a way to make good burgers like in a really fast approach. And they opened up some restaurants in California, and they grew to have like 9 or 10 restaurants, and people were liking the restaurants, but they were struggling with their 10 restaurants with this mini franchise and getting like mediocre business results. So someone told them, like, you guys need to bring on a really good CEO to really make this explode. So they brought on as CEO, a guy who, I'm probably messing up the story, but a guy who had worked for General Motors or some major organization. And with him as CEO, it then grew to have like, grew to from 10 restaurants to 30,000 restaurants over the next 5 years, something like that. And this illustrates that when you bring in someone that has really good leadership abilities, then the sky is the limit to what an organization can accomplish. So I recognize now, looking back, that the development of Karma Tribe was limited by my own issues, my own issues with money, my own fears of certain things. So in working through those, I've been able to build up Thank You Plant Medicine. And there is some money flowing through Thank You Plant Medicine now. There's some sponsorships. There's some, we're starting to have some revenue generation, at least close by. And I'm also leading the organization differently. Karma Tribe was a one-person show. Now I'm basically like elevating people to be leaders with me of Thank You Plant Medicine. We're all leaders together. We communicate in a way where I'm not like the boss. There's no hierarchy. Like, we're working together to help this flower. But even in the development of Thank You Plant Medicine, I became aware that I had a serious handicap, which was the way how I communicated with people. And as I started to become aware of this, it was like having a major blind spot revealed to you, because I started to see how I had been speaking violently to my sister, to my family, to my friends, to my coworkers. Like, as I started getting educated on what communication can be with nonviolent communication, I started really seeing how the way that I've been communicating all my life is not serving my needs. My needs are harmony with people, for my projects to blossom to their full potential, for everyone to enjoy working with me. In fact, many times the way that I was communicating was leading to the contrary, conflict, and being judgmental and dismissive and ending up alone frequently in my projects.
Was that way of being and that way of communicating, was that something that was conscious, or was that maybe something that you weren't even aware of? I mean, in other words, when you say, by the way, when you say violent communication, sometimes someone who may not understand or know what nonviolent communication is, can you break down what violent versus nonviolent communication is?
Okay, well, this is a big subject, but for example,
well, just high level, like maybe an example of violent communication versus nonviolent. I happen to have read Dr. Marshall Rosenberg's book, which, by the way, what nonviolent communication is, for listeners who aren't familiar, it's based on a book written by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg. I think, is the book called Nonviolent Communication, Dave?
He has two books, but yeah. Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life. Most
right. Of yeah. So that's the book it's based on. Okay. And then if you could give an example of violent communication versus nonviolent.
Okay. So violent communication is for me to label you. Alex is a jerk. Alex is a loser. Or even Alex is he's not a normal person.
Or even, Alex is too busy to deal with his family. Alex is too busy to get on a phone call with me, right?
Anytime you judge someone and label them as something, there's a certain violence to that, because who is the authority to judge like what is good, what is bad, what is normal, what is not normal? It's arbitrary. It's a system. We were educated in this way of labeling people, and it's so hurtful to be labeled. And it's like, even to say Alex is a good person is violent in a way, because it implies that other people are not good people. And the idea that there's some sort of moralistic truth about what is good and what is bad, that's the kind of education we've had for the past 10,000 years, mainly because of that's a good tool for control. There's hierarchical structures that we see in our society that basically say, like, I'm in possession of the truth, you're not. And so this is the priest, for example, judges the sins of the congregants. The lord of the land judges the people, the slaves. The parent says, I'm the parent and you're the child. The boss says, I'm the boss, you're the employee. And anytime you create a hierarchy like that, you start disconnecting from the fact that on a deep level, we actually want all of us to enjoy a wonderful life. And on a deep level, we know that we're all equal and that every life is equal and everyone's just doing their best. So we can switch from a language where we say like, oh, that's bad, or this person's bad, this person's abnormal, this person's a loser, this person's an idiot, to saying, I'm feeling frustrated right now because I have a need for harmony with you. Could we talk a little bit about this? And tapping into what is it that I'm feeling and needing, and listening, what is it that you're feeling and needing? And basically, it's a whole different way of communicating where you're tapping into what's alive in me, what's alive in you, me expressing, how could you make the world more wonderful for me? And me finding out from you, how can I make the world more wonderful for you?
Yeah. So if I were to take what you're describing and apply it to a scenario where you have, where you're responsible for managing an organization, let's say a group of people to accomplish a specific task. And in that organization, you have specific roles that individuals need to take on. So for example, if I have somebody, let's say in a role, and let's call it an operational role. Let's make this more pragmatic. Let's say I run a restaurant, okay? And let's say that I have a cook in my restaurant. And so I have it that my cook is really only good at making hamburgers. My cook is not good at making cold food, not so great at salads. And so I'm limiting him in my conversation with him when I say, you are good at making hamburgers, you're the hamburger guy. And so in my communication with him, and even more than that, I'm only allowing my cook, male or female, right? Whatever the gender is, I'm only allowing that person to be as much as my communication allows for. So I could also say in a different organization, I could say that my salesperson is highly unorganized. Right? And so I don't allow for that salesperson to be anything outside of being highly unorganized when I declare that that salesperson is highly unorganized. That is an observation, or that's something that I am now assigning to that person. I could take a step back away from that sense, right? And I could look at that person as being huge, great, big, able to do anything. This person could organize the most disorganized type of circumstance. And when I actually talk to that person and conversate with that person as them being this every possibility that could be there, then my conversation will then turn in a way that it hasn't before. I don't know if that's nonviolent communication. What I'm doing, though, is I'm taking what you're telling me and I'm applying it to maybe a pragmatic situation if you're dealing with an employee or a coworker.
I want to go back for a second to the example of if you have an employee who is working as the maker of hamburgers, and as an employer, it's important for them to make a really good hamburger. Well, the violent or the typical way of dealing with that situation is of saying like, okay, your job is to make a good hamburger. You're only good at hamburgers, so you focus on hamburgers. If you start messing up the hamburgers, you're going to get fired. And if you make a good hamburger, you're going to get a promotion. But if this person is going to start making good hamburgers, what do you want their reason to be for making really good hamburgers? What do you really want the reason to be? Do you want them to be making the good hamburgers because they're afraid of getting fired? Do you want them to be making good hamburgers because they're hungry for more money? Or do you want them to make good hamburgers because they really enjoy making a really good hamburger and they really enjoy contributing to the smiles on people's faces and of making the world more beautiful through their food artistry? If you can dialogue with your employee on the level of feelings and needs of saying like, hey, I'm excited right now about our potential to work together. And I have a need for us to make the best burgers in town so we can all blossom and benefit from business, including our customers. Would you be willing to learn to make like the best burgers? And the person might say, well, yeah, but I'm feeling a bit frustrated because I have a need to be in a pleasant working atmosphere. And as you can see, like the way that I'm working here, like my neck is hunched over and I'm getting neck pain all the time. And it's hard for me to really enjoy making great burgers if my neck is hurting. It's like, and so, okay, well, what would you like? Would you like a higher table or something? And so if you can get to know your employees and get to know what they're feeling and needing, you can set up a situation for them to blossom into really enjoying their job. And then the kind of energy that they're going to put into their work is going to be completely different. And then you're suddenly looking at having the best restaurant in the city. So rather than the hierarchical approach and manipulating through punishment and reward and ordering people around and judging them, getting to know them on a real human to human basis and dialoguing about how we can both get our needs met.
Mm. Wow. That is such pragmatic advice. It reminds me actually of a book that a good friend of mine, Keith Ferrazzi, wrote called Leading Without Authority, where you actually co-elevate your teams, where as opposed to this authoritative approach, where it's my way, you follow my rules, it's my vision, and you're executing on that, you're really getting into the world of everyone in your organization and finding out what's working and what's not working for them, not what's good or bad, just what's working. And when you really start to focus and shine the light on those things, and you allow those things to start to resolve themselves in conversation, then you find people who really want to be part of your organization, if it's a restaurant and or if it's a whatever it is, if it's a nonprofit, even if it's an organization like the ones that you've started and you continue to create, which are here for the benefit of all mankind, moving human consciousness. So you could go from literally a hot dog stand with four people making the best hot dogs in Chicago through this, all the way up to an organization with hundreds, or if not hundreds of thousands of employees. And this is something that's a thread through families, through pretty much everything. And so you being able to describe this in such a way that's so useful, I think is awesome for anyone listening or watching this right now.
Alex, I'd like to share one more thing.
Yeah, please.
As it pertains to business with nonviolent communication, which I found very interesting. So Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of nonviolent communication, did all kinds of work with all different institutions and humanitarian organizations, mediations, governments. And he would do some trainings with some major like Fortune 500 corporations. And so he once did a nonviolent communication training to the leadership of a major company. And then he went back a couple months later to talk to them. And he asked the CEO, have you noticed any changes since the workshop? So he goes back to visit the CEO of this corporation and ask, have you noticed any changes since the workshop we did together? And he said, you know what, Marshall, of all the things that we discussed together, your suggestion to start our meetings with gratitude, we decided to try that. And you won't believe what a difference it's made in the entire culture of our company and the way that our employees are feeling. And Marshall said, that's interesting that you say that, because I recall that when I suggested it to you, you were very resistant to the idea, because you told me like, look, we have so much to cover in our meetings and we can barely even cover what we need to cover. We're always like short on time. So I don't see this as being possible. And the guy responds, well, that's true, Marshall. But one of my senior managers who I work closely with, he loved the idea. He thought this was very important. He nagged me about it for about 2 weeks, always saying, George, what about the gratitude thing? We should give that a try. The gratitude thing, let's try it. Come on, George. So finally, I let in and we started with every big meeting with 10 minutes of gratitude, of each going around and saying things that we're grateful for. And the change has been so dramatic that now we're thinking of changing it to 20 minutes of gratitude at the beginning of every meeting. It has improved our like our productivity, our numbers, our happiness, like all of our statistics have improved. It's unbelievable. So I really wanted to thank you for that. And what you said about Keith Ferrazzi's book kind of reminded me of this, celebrating what's going well. And in nonviolent communication, the way that you express gratitude is you say what you're grateful for, how it's making you feel, and what need of yours did it meet. You might say like, Sally, I'm really grateful for the beautiful presentation you put together last week. I feel so joyous about it because I have a need to present aesthetically beautiful things to our partners. So thank you. And so it makes a very big difference to the energy of the group to do such a practice. So I really wanted to share that.
Wow. Okay. So I'm just going to tell you, that is very useful advice, which I'm actually going to implement in my organization starting tomorrow. So thank you for that. And I'll update you offline on how that goes.
Oh, thank you, Alex.
I hope everyone can see through this conversation that, first of all, how resilient you are as you've been knocked down and you've gotten back up a few times and you haven't allowed circumstances to affect your goals and what you want to accomplish in the world. So that is truly inspiring. And secondly, there's been some really great actionable things that we can take out of this that people can put into their organizations, into their relationships, in and outside of their organizations right away. And a super pragmatic tool of being able to put gratitude into meetings, which I think will not only change the energy, but also allow for a more authentic organization in people that are willing to give others something of themselves, right? To be able to really express gratitude in their organization. So anyway, I think that's awesome. Thank you, Dave, for that. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss, maybe plug, anything you're looking to include in the interview?
And I also wanted to share, Alex, that I am getting ready to launch a course on nonviolent communication called Resolving Conflict Gracefully. So depending on when a person watches this or listens to it, it might be out by then. So I'll share with you the link, Alex, so you can put it under the video. And I think it's going to be a really helpful and enjoyable course for people. And it's the most pleasurable project that I've ever worked on to develop this course. So I'm proud to share it to the world.
Oh, I'm excited to see it. And I'm sure anyone watching, listening that clicks there will be able to pull some useful information that they can apply to their lives, their organizations, their families, anything in their universe. So that's awesome. And thank you for doing everything you're doing here to contribute to the common good. All right, Dave. Well, thank you for your time today. This was an awesome interview. Fantastic. So much insight, so many useful gifts, so many tools that we've pulled out of this. We look forward to seeing all of the amazing impacts that you make in the world with the work that you're putting together. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Alex. I really love you and I'm really honored to be here.
And I'm honored to have you.
Thank you for tuning in to Off the Clock. Don't miss next week's tips around innovation and HR. Subscribe to the show. You can catch us on YouTube, Apple, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time.